You are listening to the Willpower Podcast. Welcome to the show. I am Will Holdren, and I talk with some of the most influential CEOs, entrepreneurial leaders, and thought leaders to try and reveal the secrets that has led to their success. I believe that with the right knowledge and mindset, you can do anything you set your mind to. So if you want to learn how to change your life for the better, if you want to learn how millionaires actually became wealthy, or if you want to develop and start your own business from the ground up with the right knowledge to help you, then you are in the right place because this is the Willpower Podcast. Attention, self-employed professionals and business owners. Are rising healthcare costs weighing you down? Well, it's time to make a change. Introducing Impact Healthcare, your path to savings. With us, you can save up to 50% on your monthly healthcare expenses. Our flexible plans are designed to fit your needs, and our user-friendly app puts healthcare in the palm of your hand. Join the thousands who have already made the switch to Impact Healthcare and take control of your healthcare costs today. If you're interested, click the link in the bio of this episode and give yourself a free quote to see for yourself the amazing savings that you can get with Impact Healthcare. Hey. No way that we go is a one-way street. Nothing that we love is a one-day key. And if we gon' do it, we gon' do this now. And if we say we gonna, we gon' hold this down. How's it going, everyone? My name is Will Holdren. I'm the host of the Will Power Podcast. Today we have an amazing guest. He's actually one of the top sales coaches in the entire United States. His name is Adam Allred. And as I mentioned, he's a top sales coach. He's actually helped develop door-to-door sales reps for over 20 years now. And he's actually the founder of his own company called Ninefold. And on top of that, he's an advocate for the masculine soul, which in today's world and everything going on, I think that is more needed than ever before. So with that being said, Adam, thank you so much for joining me today.
Will, glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course, man. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I've saw a lot about you online, on Instagram, and all your reels. So as I mentioned, I'm super excited for this. And so to start out, like I do for all my guests, I kind of want to go into your background a little bit and kind of tell me what your childhood was like and how it helped turn you into who you are today.
So my old man was in the military. He did 30 years in the military as a JAG. And so when I was about six, we started moving. So I grew up all over the world, originally from Utah. That's where both my parents are from. But we were living, you know, all over the States. We lived in Germany for a while. We lived in Japan for a few years. And so my upbringing was one of constantly being transplanted, which can be rough on kids. Fortunately, I had a really strong family life. Like, my parents were really good parents. And my parents were really, like, we had a strong family. And the military is cool because everybody's moving around, you know, like, so when you're new, everybody else has been new or is new as well. So you make friends really quick. It was easy to pick up friends in the military. And I think I learned a lot about how to communicate and how to, you know, build friends and networks and stuff from that type of upbringing.
Yeah, definitely important, especially for entrepreneurship. So with that being said, when did you kind of get interested in entrepreneurship, and how did that, you know, grow up in your past to where you are now?
Yeah, so I was not the typical, like, I have a lot of business partners and co-founders in a lot of these different companies that I've done, and almost all of them knew they were going to go into business when they started. I didn't. Like, I went to school to get an English degree because I like to read and I like to write a little bit.
Wow.
And it took me 7 years to get a four-year degree.
Oh boy.
I just wasn't taking school that seriously. We'd take semesters off to go travel. I was working in the summer times doing door-to-door sales and making good enough money that I could, like, backpack across Egypt or, you know, go to, you know, some other far reach of the world, Thailand or something like that. And so skipped a lot of school to do that kind of stuff. And it ended up taking me 7 years to get a bachelor's in English. But during that time, I'm glad it took that long, and I'm glad I took that journey to not just feel like I had to rush through it and kind of find myself a little bit, because I realized that for me as a man to be satisfied in my work, what I was going into the world to go do, I had to have one of two options. Like, I either had to find something that I was just passionate about. You know, like, if you want to be a football high school football coach, you want to do that, go do it. If you're passionate about it, you're going to be happy. It doesn't matter how much money you make. You're going to be fulfilled. If you want to be an accountant, Lord, God bless your soul. I don't know why anybody would want to be an accountant, but if it makes you happy and you're passionate about it, then go do it. If you have that passion for it, right? Or if you can't find that passion, then the alternative, at least in my mind, was to do something that would set me free, make enough money as quickly as possible that I would have the freedom to do what I really want to do with my life. And so that's how I got into business, frankly. It took me a while to kind of figure that out going through college, that, hey, there wasn't really anything that I could see as a career path that I was super passionate about. And everything just looked like it was going to be 30 years of some degree of servitude, you know, a cog in the machine. And then when you're chewed up and broken, they spit you out and you can retire and watch Matlock or go golf or whatever. You know, I don't know what you do when you get retired, but none of that looked that appealing for, you know, a chunk of your life to be dedicated to working for somebody else and kind of somebody else telling you what your value is, when you can go on vacation, when you can retire, you know, those kinds of things. So got into business, and then it's interesting because now I found what I'm passionate about too. So kind of found both in this space.
Yeah. Now that's a very interesting, you know, kind of take on the whole college part of it. You know, say it took you 7 years, but you're kind of happy it took you that long because you're kind of able to find yourself. And, you know, college gets a lot of hate nowadays, and as it should, for how much money really costs kids, and kids don't really know how much debt they're going to get into once they graduate. But on the one of the advantages, like you're talking about, is college is one great way to really take time to find yourself, get some independency from like your parents, all that kind of stuff, and see kind of where you want to go in your future life without kind of rushing into it, just like you're talking about. So I love that whole aspect of it. And I'm definitely in college right now. I can definitely tell you, like, it's not as much as what you learn. I would say it's more as like the experience that, like, you're talking about. And you know, yeah, you got those chance to go out and travel Egypt and, you know, hike in some crazy mountains, all that fun stuff there. If you never went to college, you never had those chance to take those experiences, which is pretty cool. And then you also mentioned as well that, you know, find your passion. If you find your passion, go into that for a full-time thing. But if you don't, then I love how you said, you know, I just want to make money so I can retire as quickly as possible. And that led you into business, which is a pretty cool take. So from then on, like, kind of what age were you when you graduated college? And then you mentioned you jumped right into business after that. So what was your first business that you kind of started outside of college?
Yeah, so I all through college, it's all kind of connected, because all through college in the summertime, at least out here in Utah, and it's grown a lot since then. But it's really common for college kids in Utah to go out and sell door to door in the summertime to make money. And it's an insane amount of money kids can make doing door to door sales. Like, somebody needs to make a documentary about it, because it's just wild. I got to the point my third or fourth year summer where I was making $150,000 in the summertime. And that almost 20 years ago. It's only gotten more aggressive since then. So in 3.5 months, I would make twice what my professors were making. And that was also kind of part of where the light bulb was going off. It's like, I can go just work my life for a paycheck, or I can go figure out what I'm really worth and what I'm really capable of. So that's part of the reason why it took 7 years to get through college, is because I was doing these summer sales gigs and just making great money. Didn't really feel motivated like I had to get into the workforce. Yeah. And so I graduated when I was 27, if I remember correctly. I think I was about 27.
Wow.
Got a marketing deal when I was 28. Cause I did a 2 year LDS mission when I was 19. So I went on a Mormon mission for 2 years, and that's kind of how I got some door to door sales experience. And that's why it's like so big in Utah for door to door sales. Cause there's all these Mormons that come back from knocking doors for 2 years, and they've got some grit and ability to get their asses kicked knocking doors.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I got out and did some kind of marketing door to door sales stuff for a couple of years, and then rolled into starting a garbage company. My first real company was in Philadelphia. We started a waste hauling company, residential, with door to door sales guys. So I had a little team of guys. My business partner and I moved out there. We started knocking doors in Philly to sell garbage services to people door to door.
Yeah.
And, kind of crazy out in Philadelphia, because there's other parts of the country like it, but it's not common where they have deregulated markets where everybody has to pick their own hauling company. So like on one street, there can be five different garbage companies going up and down picking up trash, because everybody just kind of, there's competition for your service, you know, for your business, for the different services. And so we saw where we could save people a lot of money. It wasn't like even an original idea or anything. We just like, hey, we can get out to Philadelphia. They're getting overcharged, because we can cut a lot of these bills in half and still be making good money. And so it was kind of like this really fun time. It was a ton of work, but it was like, hey, we're saving people money like crazy. So you feel like the good guy, and we're making good money. Yeah. So we had kind of the perfect, stars line up for the initial business. And within a year and a half, had over 7,000 customers, and our competitors, these old mafia guys, like at least the remnants of the mafia, you know, like most of the original mafia guys in the Italian garbage world in Philadelphia are either like sleeping with the fishes or they're in prison or whatever. And these are like the nephews and the uncles that didn't go to jail or end up in a land, and they're running things out there. And so it's got this kind of mafia feel to it. And we're just these kids, these Mormon kids from Utah that are like just knocking on doors, taking business. And and eventually made us an offer we couldn't refuse. They just kept like increasing the offer. And we're like, yeah, man, we've been here for 18 months. We can sell this out for $3.5-4 million. It's our first venture. It's not a bad takeaway. So we took it and then just rolled into some more businesses since then.
Yeah, that's amazing. And honestly, like the fact you did door-to-door sales in college for making 150 grand during the summer, like that in itself is so impressive. Because as you mentioned, I think that's such an underestimated industry where someone can just go into that and make a straight killing. But there's just that fear factor you got to overcome. But like you mentioned, as you overcome that fear factor, like it's just all sunshine. Like once you get over the fear, like nothing can really stop me. Then it's just one door after another door. And then eventually sales start piling up. And like you mentioned, start making six figures as a college kid, which is pretty exciting. And I don't think a lot of people realize that there's that opportunity that's really out there. So that's definitely something to take advantage of. And then, so why did you decide to go to Philadelphia from Utah as your first business? Like what was the draw to Philadelphia? And also why did you decide to go into the garbage collecting industry? Because I feel like the garbage collector, I feel like it's some shady residents you're dealing with in Philadelphia, because I've been there multiple times. There are definitely some bad parts of Philadelphia. Like I said, the mob stuff, all that kind of stuff. So why did you decide to go down that direction in Philadelphia?
Yeah, good question. So my business partner at the time, he'd actually started a couple of different garbage companies. So that's how we got into garbage. I'd been selling door-to-door, mostly pest control for pest control companies, but I'd done some home security and a little bit of garbage sales as well when I was going through college. That's how I met my business partners. I actually worked for his company, knocking doors, selling garbage out in the east, like kind of northeast. I was in Connecticut one year. So he'd had experience and had already done well with one company. And so that gave me some confidence partnering up with him that we could do it again. And since most of the garbage marketing that he was doing for his company and when I was working for him was in the Northeast, we kind of had Philadelphia and crosshairs. We were familiar with the market, familiar with the pricing. You got to find like a perfect market to build a residential garbage company, which is where the competitors are way overpriced and you can come in and save people a lot of money on their garbage bill. And Philadelphia just happened to fit the mold for that. So we got that in our crosshairs and then ended up making the decision to kind of sell off everything we had. We put all of our life savings into this company, which wasn't a lot at the time, but it was everything we had. We put it in there. And just as a little commentary on how rough Philly, and I love Philly, but it is definitely a rough place. It's got some rough edges. Our first week in Philadelphia, we're dropping off a trailer. We're driving. It's like in the evening. It's 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. I can't remember. The sun's still out. And we roll up on these two cars that are stopped in the middle of the road blocking traffic. And this dude, these two guys are out and they've been fighting. And another guy pulls out a gun and shoots the other guy in the chest. And then, I mean, they're like 15 feet from us. Like he turns around, looks straight at me and my business partner, the guy that shot the other guy. He looks at us for a little bit. We look at him. There's other people around. It's a busy day. And then he just goes and gets in his car and drives off. And we jump out and we roll this dude over. He was Hispanic, so he wasn't speaking English. He was like, "Hey, Jesus Cristo," like talking. And we're like, "Bro, hang in there." But he's got this huge hole in his chest. And we're like, "Dude, hang in there. You're going to be okay." He's not going to be okay. "You're going to be okay, bro. You're going to make it." Ambulances came and got him. They were there pretty quick, and he tragically ended up dying in a coma like a few months later. And we had to go to court and testify. It was this crazy whole experience, like welcome to Philadelphia.
Right. Yeah, that's an insane experience. I could not imagine just being there when that happened, especially with just you and your business partners going about your daily business and all of a sudden that stuff happened. So yeah, that's scary. So I'm assuming like on top of that reason, why did you guys decide to sell the business? Just because the price offer was that great? Obviously, you guys didn't want to do that like long term. The main reason is just because of the price tag that came along with that for you guys?
Well, yeah, actually. So we were building it to keep it. And in fact, all of my businesses since then, we've always built to keep, which I think puts us in a stronger position when we do go to market to sell. We're kind of in that frame of mind, like we're going to build this company to make it profitable and make a lot of money. But if somebody makes us an offer that's really good, we'll consider it. Like we're always kind of willing to sell. if the offer is good enough. And that's how we started the first company. So we started it like thinking we were going to be in Philadelphia for a long time. Like we were planning on being there for 5 to 10 years, maybe more than that.
Gotcha.
And guys just kept hitting us up. Now, I had no context of what it was like to make $1 million. Like that was just this sort of wild ass idea that seemed way far-fetched. Like you'd take home over $1 million
Right.
off of some venture. So I think for me at least, I was pretty enamored with the idea of making $1 million. And I think that's probably why I was. They made us a really good offer for one on the business in terms of like what garbage companies sold for. They kept up in the offer. We kept telling them no because we weren't trying to sell. And then they finally came at us with an offer and said, "Hey, we'll give you this." And we're like, "Dude, it's going to take us 4 years to build that much business. You know, that's going to make it that kind of money. So let's just
Yeah.
sell it right now."
Yeah. I
Yeah,
got
and then yeah, that's kind of how it worked.
that's a pretty that's a good enough reason for me. You know, if someone came up to me offering a multi-million-dollar check, I'd be like, ah, man, I guess so. You know, so that's something hard to turn down, especially in your 20s. So definitely can't blame you there. So talk to me for a second on like the finances side of things. So mostly entrepreneurs, they're really good at growing their business and scaling their business, but when it comes to like the finance side of thing, like actually exiting properly, dealing with the whole taxes. All that side of stuff, I feel like there's a major drop off in just education level. You did mention on top that you had an English major, right? So you're not familiar at all with like the finances and how business finances really work. So how do you properly go through that transition? Did you take the best advantage you could, like that money you guys gained, like tax advantages, or did you guys just kind of go into it blindly? And what happened? What happened? You guys just got hammered with like a huge tax bill on top of that, you know? So how did that process work?
Yeah, kind of a combination of all of that. I'm not a business guy, to be honest with you. Even though I've been in business for most of my adult life, it's not. I'm more like a marketing guy. I'm good at hiring guys and putting together teams. And my business partners are business guys. Like these guys are the guys that are looking at spreadsheets. I joke around with one of my business partners that spreadsheets are like porno pages for him. He's got so many of them opened up, and I'm like, bro, have you talked to your wife about this? Because this is not like he's
Oh,
just looking.
man.
We joke around that we got him chained in the closet, and he just all he can do is look at spreadsheets all day long, and he loves it. So he just crunches numbers. So one of my strengths that I've had is to be able to surround myself with really competent, good people that that I love and that I trust, and vice versa. And we built these companies on that type of foundation. So when we've gone to exit, I've relied heavily on them for what we're going to be doing in terms of trying to deal with the taxes and stuff. Also, I have a really good accountant that I've used for the last almost 20 years that was really influential and important in all of my exits. I've had a number of exits since then where we've made multi-million dollars on sell-offs of different companies. And so I just try and rely on the experts. I don't feel like I have to know it all or even necessarily have a firm grasp on everything. I just need to know that there's people that I can trust that do know it and I can, you know, kind of rely on them. So yeah, my accountant was really good about helping us to avoid taxes. To be honest with you, I don't even remember the different things that he had me kind of doing that year for taxes.
Right.
But I ended up paying a lot less than what I thought I was going to pay.
That's awesome. And that's a very great point. You know, I think as entrepreneurs, it's one of the major assets is your ability to kind of surround yourself with people that fill into your weaknesses. Like you talked about, you got to recognize what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. And that's fine to have those kind of weaknesses, just like you're talking about, but then you need to find people to fill in those gaps for those weaknesses. So I'm kind of curious from a networking standpoint, how do you go out there and find those types of people that you know are going to fill in for your weaknesses?
It's honestly not like it's not like a super orchestrated, calculated process for me. Like I'm not like, oh, I need to go find somebody that knows this better than me.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a networker, or maybe it comes from that military upbringing, you know, just constantly having to make new friends and stuff. So for me, like I really enjoy relationships. I enjoy like knowing people, like all different walks of life. Like in high school, like half my friends were comic book nerds that were playing Magic the Gathering and we're sitting at like the outcast table in the cafeteria, and half my friends were like the star football players, and I like loved them all. Like so I've
Yeah.
kind of had that, which has been a huge blessing for me because I have had the ability to find all different types of walks of life. And so if there's ever been something that I've needed, I haven't had to go out and try and meet somebody. I usually have somebody like that in my arsenal already. I'm like, oh yeah, my buddy does this. I can go hit him up for, you know, whatever it is that I there's something I could use some help with. And
Yeah. I love that. And it's just
Yeah.
back to the mindset to always be out there networking and just building relationships with people. Like that's pretty much it. Bottom line, at the end of the day, you always got to build relationships with people around you. So
Back in that
go ahead.
vein, I think really interesting. I think it was an interview. I can't remember if it was with Mark Cuban or if it was about Mark Cuban. I can't remember. This was like 6 months ago. I was listening to one of these podcasts, and the guy was saying that he'd been talking to Mark Cuban about what did it take to become a millionaire. And Mark said it was execution and systems. And that made sense to me because I know what it's like to be a millionaire. And I was like, that's exactly what it takes. There's more factors than that, but those are kind of some of the primary things that you have to have in place is you got to really be able to execute on your game plan, and you got to have good systems in place. They asked him the question, what does it take to be a billionaire? And what was the difference between being a millionaire and a billionaire? And he said, it's relationships. It's all relationships. And I've got a lot of friends that have made a lot more money than me, and I can see how true that is. Like, they continue to grow in the business space because the people they know, because the connections they have, the trust and the relationships they've built, it opens up so many doorways for people. So yeah, I would highly recommend if you're interested in leveling yourself up in anything, life, business, or otherwise, make friends, be open, connect with people, like, you know, make that a priority in your life. Make it something that you're interested in, because there's only good that comes out of that, in my opinion. Like, there's just so many opportunities from knowing more people and not just pigeonholing yourself into a few select friends or a certain type of friend set. Like, I only hang out with the jocks or whatever, but like having a wide range of friends that are across the spectrum and genuinely caring about them so that if you are ever in need, they genuinely care about you and ready to help you out. And I found that just to be one of the greatest blessings that I've had in my life so far.
Yeah, that's a very great point. And just like you mentioned, you just got your foot in the door. And I think a lot of people are kind of afraid to kind of invest money to do that. But like you're talking about, the reward and payoff for doing that is just immeasurable, right? I mean, you can go to these events where you know that top tier entrepreneurs are going to be there, pay a couple thousand dollars to get in the same room as them, just to tap into their brain and kind of ask them some questions. But that's a game changer, right? And so that's to me is like one of the best ways for people to go out there and increase their network. And on top of that way, do you know, like, what, like in your opinion, what are the other best ways to kind of go out there and meet like these high quality people to get into your network?
Well, it becomes, at least for me, it's become a compounding effect. So because I've always just been dialed in that way and interested in making friends and knowing more people, and genuinely so, right? Not even like what can I get out of them, because I think that just cheapens the relationship, and there's always going to be that sense in the relationship from both parties that it's kind of contrived. But genuinely interested in people, genuinely caring about them and wanting to connect with them has just become a compounding effect. That I have met so many successful people now just through the people I know. In fact, I was just flying back from Puerto Vallarta on Sunday, ran into a buddy of mine that I hadn't seen since college. We used to work out at the gym together, and he married my cousin's cousin, so I've kind of been affiliated with him, but I haven't talked to him in probably 10 years. Haven't seen him in 10 years. And he's like, Adam. And I'm like, Scott, what's up? I'm like talking to him at the airport of Puerto Vallarta. And then he's introducing me to like five of his friends are all on a surfing trip. And these guys are all CEOs of huge corporations, all of them. Like, they're all these big, like if I told you some of their names, you'd know who they are, at least the companies that they've run. One of the guys had taken two companies public, another guy's making $300+ million a year off of what he's created on some of these business ventures he's done. These guys were all giants. And just knowing my buddy Scott, now I'm connected with them and we're linking up on social media. And again, I'm not linking up with them to try and get something out of them. I just think it's cool to know cool people. You know, that's kind of my mantra. Like, I think it's cool to know cool people. Yeah, but that always tends to open up doorways. But I thought this was an interesting story. Do you know who Jesse Itzler is?
Yes, I do.
He's super sharp. He came to our event last year, my company's event. We put on it's called the season opener, and we had him come out and give like our keynote address to the sales guys that are about to go out. So Jesse Itzler was there, and I got to talk to him for a while. He's a really cool guy. And speaking of networking, he's like, yeah, invited me to go on a bike race with him and stuff like that. And it just kind of starts building on things. But he told me he was trying to get networked. He told me this really cool story where he was at some big tech function convention of some sort, but he didn't have the credentials or the path to get in, but he wanted to know the type of people that were in there, but he couldn't get into the event. So he would just kind of hang out on the outskirts, but he had no reason for anybody to talk to him. So he was just like hustling, but like everything's against him, you know? And so he got this bright idea. They would have these breaks and everybody would come out of the convention and go to this coffee shop and buy coffee and pastries. So he went there that like the second day or third day of the convention and bought all of the pastries from this restaurant, all of them, and then waited for everybody to come out. And then they had to come buy pastries from him. You know, they bought their coffee shop, the coffee shop's out, and then he's just holding all the pastries. And so they're buying pastries from him. And then he's meeting these guys and making connections. And I think some of those connections actually turned into business arrangements for him later in the future. So wow. I don't know, you got to be creative sometimes.
That's awesome. You're right. It's just about thinking outside the box, and that's a really great way to do it. So, I mean, you got to do what works for you, you know, at the end of the day. But yeah, Jesse is an awesome guy. I saw his stuff on Instagram. He's very intense, does a lot of bike marathons, all that kind of stuff. So did you go on that bike ride with him you're talking about?
I couldn't. He was doing a cross the country one with some buddies of his, and he was like, dude, come out and hit up Texas. His assistant reached out to my assistant. We were talking about, because I used to cycle a lot of as much anymore, but so we just kind of were talking about similar, you know, interests that we had, and his secretary reached out to mine and said, hey, we want Adam to come on this trip. And it just so happened that it was in the summertime where I got all my sales guys out knocking doors, and there just wasn't a logistical way for me to make it happen with my responsibilities. Gotcha. I didn't go, but those are one of those moments where you kind of wish you could have been in two places at once, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible though, because just like you're talking, he's a great dude, and I know his workouts are intense, like very intense, like David Goggins type stuff. So, yeah. they're just different breeds of people. That's for sure. So I want to switch lanes a little bit here for the last 4 minutes that we have. And I also know that you have on Instagram, you're an advocate for the masculine soul, and this to me is something that's so important in today's society. So, in your own words, like, what does that mean to you, and what are you trying to accomplish with that in today's world?
Well, I'm sort of kind of trying to figure out the second part of your question. What am I trying to accomplish? I'm actually sort of trying to discover myself in that. I guess I've made really good money in business and continue to, and so I don't need to do anything on social media, as far as I think some people like the outset or the game plan is to go get to build their brand so that they can market it and make a living and make money. And I respect that. I don't really need to do that, nor am I even trying to make any kind of money on it. I think it just kind of feeds into this idea that I like to be networked with people. I like to be connected. But on a more fundamental level right now, like, I feel like, yeah, one of the things that maybe the thing that we are struggling most with in our society, in my opinion, is the cheapening of masculinity, or at least the demeaning of it and the mitigating of it. I feel like if we had a society of strong men right now, we would have a vastly different country and a different world, frankly, that we would be living in right now for the better. If men were strong, if they were in their element, if they were fulfilling their responsibilities as they should be and stepping up to the plate and being the type of people that men need to be, everything would be better right now. And because men are weak, I think there's so many things that are going wrong in society right now. Yeah. So I feel kind of compelled to speak on it. I'm trying to kind of figure my voice out and figure that out right now. This has been like a new venture. And I've had like one of my videos go viral, which surprised me more than probably anybody else. Like, I was like, this is crazy. Like, it just took off. But there's obviously a lot of people that want to hear that and have a lot of similar views on it, which is encouraging, frankly. Like, there's a lot of men that I've been connected with now just through. I started doing this Instagram page like 2 months ago, a little over 2 months ago. So it's brand, like, it's been my Instagram page for a long time. But as far as like the masculine soul and feeling like I need to speak some of the things that are in my heart and in my mind on this subject publicly, this only been the last couple of months that I've started making these reels and posting content for that purpose. It's all been personal, just family stuff, but it's been really encouraging to see how much that's resonated with a lot of men and even women to a large degree. I get a lot of comments, DMs from women that are like echoing what I'm saying to men. Like, this is exactly what we need. We need men like this, and women need to hear something too. You know, I get a lot of that feedback already. It's been pretty encouraging, actually.
Yeah. And I love that. And like you said, we need more leaders and men going out there and doing that. That's one of the things I want to kind of push on my page as well. And you're seeing like people like, you know, Andy Frisella on his podcast, that he talks about that all the time as well, Brian DeBobby. And these like messages are so important. You know, me as like a college kid, it's crazy. Like, you see the transition. I'm 21, obviously, like the way the world's changed in the past 21 years just for me, it's just like crazy. You know, I think one of the problems is this stuff, you know, people on their cell phones always in it, and they're not really doing the handshakes, not doing stuff door to door. Like, that's one of the things I love about door to door sales is you got to talk to that person face to face and read language, read their body language, that kind of stuff. And on top of that, I just feel like our ideologies and our society are changing so much, and it's making men not men anymore, just like you're talking about. So that to me is just a huge pain point. And obviously you're seeing the destruction in our country just in the past couple of years of what that's actually done to it. So I think it's just a super important message you're pushing on that. So I want to shine a light on that for a little bit.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I know you got a quick cutoff here. So before we hop off, is there anything else that you would like to say? And if people want to reach out to you or your company Ninefold, how should they go about doing that?
Yeah, they can reach out to me on social media, Adam Allred Official. I'm on Instagram and TikTok. TikTok's a little bit different. I have a buddy of mine, a guy that's working for me that just kind of manages it. He's throwing up all kinds of wild stuff. I don't even know what's up there half the time. So it's probably be dialed in on that Instagram one I'm managing. But
Yeah.
Adam Allred, you can hit me up on Instagram if anybody's interested or interested in following for the journey. But no, I just close out with Will. I think what you're doing is really cool. I love seeing particularly young men or women that are out hustling, trying to level themselves up and trying to do something that's important. Yeah, every work, you know, that somebody does, if it's providing a living, is obviously important. And there's no demeaning that. But there's also degrees of that. And when you're out trying to spread around things that are truthful and in your heart, you know, things that you feel strongly about, I think we need a lot more of that, a lot more people speaking up. We talk about the silent majority all the time, and the silent majority needs to stop being silent.
Yeah.
Like, people start speaking up, especially men, not just sitting around waiting to be prodded or waiting for things to get bad enough to finally do something about it. It's like we're in the fight, I think, of our generation for the heart and soul of our country, and maybe even for the existence of it ultimately. I think things are really getting that bad and out of control because we have tyrannical, weak, evil people in power right now that are manipulative and controlling, or trying to, I think, ultimately destroy the freedom that we have here in this country. I think this is a time for patriots. This is a time for men. This is time for people to step up and really speak out and stand against this stuff. So I applaud you, and I appreciate what you're doing, brother.
I appreciate that, and I agree 100%. I think the next decade is going to be one for the history books, and it's going to determine how our country kind of turns up for the next couple hundred years. So I'm right there with you. All right, guys, there you have it. Adam Allred, thank you so much for joining me today.
No way that we go is a one-way street. Nothing that we owe.